And electric cars are nothing more than an expensive way to promote the environmentalist agenda. Guess who said that? Rush Limbaugh, of course. He's trying to kill the electric car, but too bad he's a little too late on that. We are speaking with Chelsea Sexton, one of the champions of the electric car, and she was years ago before it was popular to talk about such radical ideas, and Joseph Rome, who has been on the climate beat for as long as I've been on this green beat. That's at least 10 years. He writes the best climate blog out there. It's called climateprogress.org. He's with the Center for American Progress, and he's kind enough to join us again. He was on the show just a month ago, but with fires raging and floodwaters, killing how many hundreds of people in Pakistan and record heat waves across the planet, we just had to have him back and make all these connections, tie all these threads together between our weird weather, the electric cars advent, and people who are still trying to say it's a bad idea. Welcome back to the program, Joe.
Hey, thanks for having me and my co-star.
Yes, you two, my shiro and my hero, right here in one program. I'm so excited. I'm going to have to let everybody know you were on the program, and thanks for both of you for joining me kind of last minute. I love connecting these dots, and you guys are doing it perfectly. So I understand you were just talking with Chelsea about the way the media, mainstream media, was covering the debut of the Chevy Volt. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, Joe.
Yeah, well, you know, the media, they like to have a narrative, and now it's, you know, kick Barack Obama and write negative stories about the economy. In fact, I think, you know, Obama has averted the Bush-Cheney depression, and as I wrote on a post on Climate Progress, you know, he's really given the U.S. auto industry a fighting chance. And a lot of us, are pleasantly surprised. But the media can't really say anything negative about the auto industry, so they've been reprinting this narrative on the Chevy Volt somehow as if this car is not going to be a success and somehow represents failed policies of the Obama administration, when in fact it's been in the works for long before the government showed up, and it just reflects, as I'm sure Chelsea has talked about, a desire for choice in the marketplace. Anything that doesn't mean running your car on a gasoline, and I think that the car is already appears to be under greater demand than anybody than GM thought. And as I've written many times, the future is electric drive vehicles. Whether you believe in peak oil, and I think we're going to be going back to $4 and $5 a gallon gasoline, or global warming, or you just don't like sending $1 billion a day overseas to buy foreign oil. You know, people don't like the oil companies for obvious reasons, and they want choices.
And they're finally coming out of Detroit. Isn't that a great story that, there are new factory plants replacing dying or dead factory plants making green cars?
Yeah, and, it's so the right wing so much wants Obama to fail that Rush Limbaugh actually admitted on his radio program that he canceled an advertising campaign with GM. He would this is how much.
Wait. He turned
Obama
down money. He turned down more money.
And a chance to help create American jobs. You know, it's kind of this obsession. And the weird thing is, if GM sells a few less cars, that's certainly not going to hurt Obama much, but it's going to hurt GM and auto workers a great deal. So you have the right wing, which is very much wants Obama to fail, and you have the media, which just wants to find every chance to find something negative to say about the president. But I think, the Volt is not a perfect car, but I have this great cartoon up on my website that someone had posted where someone says, Rush Limbaugh says electric car technology will never catch on because it's too expensive and inconvenient. Gonna respond? And Obama's holding this huge cell phone, and he says, sure, I'll give him a ring on this $4,000 two-pound first-generation cell phone that has to be recharged every hour.
Perfect.
The fact is, technology in batteries is getting better every day. I'm publishing a story on Climate Progress almost every week of a major, either a major breakthrough or, for instance, DuPont, who one of the biggest chemical companies in the world, just announced that it has technology that can boost lithium-ion battery power, increase the lifetime of the batteries, and increase their safety. So you're just seeing a lot of companies starting to, you know, bring in technology that I think is going to dramatically improve these cars. And then the last point, I'm sure Chelsea said it, is, you know, the Chinese think this is the future. They have put a great deal of money. They want to corner the market for batteries and for electric cars. And
they know this is the future. They know it.
They know it. This is a chance, and I think the Obama administration has given Detroit a fighting chance to survive and be a leader in fuel-efficient cars with his fuel economy standards and in electric cars, which are definitely the future.
Chelsea, you still there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, what do you suppose the environmentalist agenda would be? Rush Limbaugh says that's all this is an expensive way to promote the environmentalist agenda. You think it might be like saving the planet and the people on it and future generations having some abundance of clean air and food and water as opposed to...
Yeah. No, we're all just a bunch of masochists, so we'd rather, you know, drive painfully boring cars and spend more money to do so.
It's hard to believe that he's still laughing all the way to the bank and others like him, Sean Hannity. You know, they say this garbage and they're getting away with it. And I think that's the next way we've got to turn around here. The right wing, you know, lock on at least the radio airwaves and the outrageous things they're saying. But that's why I'm doing this program, and we just need to have as many millions of listeners as Rush does every day. But in the end, the truth is on our side, correct? The facts are on our side.
The Rush Limbaugh has. It's a lot easier for Rush to be entertaining because fiction, you know, is more entertaining than nonfiction.
Yeah, the environmentalist agenda, fiction. That's fiction.
Rush just gets to make stuff up and tell pretty stories and. But you know, the fact is that over the next 10 to 15 years. Everybody on the planet is going to see what we're experiencing around the world already. I mean, Russia is being brutalized by a staggering heat wave across the country, which is burning down. I mean, you know, Dmitry Medvedev, the president, actually said Friday, what's happening with the planet's climate right now needs to be a wake-up call to all of us, meaning all heads of state, all heads of social organizations, in order to take a more energetic approach to countering the global changes to the climate. And this is from a country that up until now has been in much as denial as this country. But, you know, 14 of their regions are, you know, according to Medvedev, practically everything is burning. And so you have this blistering heat wave. We've obviously had a blistering heat wave here in the United States, staggering record-breaking temperatures. In fact, and I posted on the blog Climate Progress yesterday, 2010 breaks the record for the most nations that have set all-time temperature records.
From January to May.
At 15. So we've had... 16 of the nations on Earth set their extreme high temperature of all time this year. And both NASA and NOAA report that this is the warmest January to June on record, and it's the warmest 12-month period on record. So, yeah, the planet is getting hotter, just as the scientists had predicted, and that heat causes more heat waves, obviously. It makes dry areas scorching dry, but it also puts more water vapor in the atmosphere, so places where it tends to flood, like Pakistan, are now seeing just this devastating flood, which has already killed 1,200 people. It's displaced over 2 million people, and it's actually causing outbreaks of cholera.
Come hell and high water. That's exactly what your book is about, I imagine. I haven't read it, but I certainly have quoted it a lot, and I should read it, and I will.
This extreme weather is exactly what scientists have said will become more common as we heat up the planet. And, I mean, the important thing for people to realize is this is just the tip of the iceberg. The planet has only warmed about a degree and a half Fahrenheit in the last century. We could easily warm 9 degrees Fahrenheit this century. and that would create extreme weather the likes of which humankind has never seen. So, you know, the opportunity is to take action now.
Guess what? As you probably noticed, the Senate just decided not to take any action on climate change. This is a bit surreal, and it would be, you know, ironic to the point of being funny if it wasn't so tragic in terms of serious consequences already being felt.
Yeah, well, there's no question that it is a great tragedy that the Senate can't even take what would have to be described as moderate action that it was considering, really. But, you know, we have a very dysfunctional political system. You can't even get 60 senators because you need some Republicans to vote for unemployment insurance extension. So,
and those Republicans have reservations on another planet, I guess. We'll have to wait and hear which one that is.
Yeah, the entire Republican Party has gone, you know, anti-scientific and pro-pollution. It's really a great tragedy. So that formerly, even a guy like John McCain, who 2 years ago was the biggest champion in the Republican Party for action on global warming, he now attacks and demagogues against even a weaker bill than the one he tried to pass twice. So, you know, the Tea Party has really forced the Republican Party who has refused to denounce it, to kowtow to, you know, extremist elements.
And in Russia, I'm just reading one of the articles about the heat wave and the fires. They're blaming some of the deaths from drowning on vodka, but most of them, more people were at the beach drinking vodka because of the record heat wave. A deadly combination, I guess, climate change and alcohol. I'm sort of making a joke, but this is so dramatic in terms of showing what not only is going to happen, but what is already happening. What will it take, Joseph and Chelsea? I'd like to get your thoughts. We just have about 10 more minutes on really awakening the still slumbering masses, at least in this country, to really see what is happening before our very eyes.
Well, unfortunately, you know, if we look at countries that have changed their view, it takes pretty great devastation. What Russia is experiencing now, you had this devastating heat wave in 2003 in Europe, I think, that influenced Europeans. What flipped Australia was a 13-year drought, a once-in-a-thousand-year drought, and devastating firestorms and the like. So, you know, unfortunately, bad stuff, more bad stuff is going to have to happen. And one of the points I try to make on climate progress is that we've already seen a lot of bad stuff. The media just doesn't write about it. You can listen to the network news talk about these heat waves or what's happening in Russia, and they never mention at all that this is what scientists have said would happen under a globally warmed world. What happened in Nashville? I mean, a major U.S. city devastated with a once-in-a-thousand-year flood. And it the story itself barely got any attention, and what stories there were, you know, again, never mentioned that when you heat up the planet, you put more water vapor into the atmosphere, and that water vapor gets sucked into major storm systems, and it comes down in these intense deluges of flooding and rain.
Well, covered it on the green front, and not the least of which is because, I noted the irony of it being Al Gore's hometown.
Yeah.
And it was right a few weeks before he gathered 700 of us there to talk about solutions to climate change, or supposedly was going to give us solutions. I said on the last time you were on the program, I enjoyed your talk more than Al Gore's. Nothing against the vice president. It just seemed like it was, a rehash of what we already knew. But that's why I was really glad that you spoke, because so much of this is about how we talk about it, how we get the message out in mainstream media, how we connect the dots for more Americans to understand that this is no longer and really never has been something that's off in the distant future or, you know, up there in Alaska. It is right here. I mean, in that very hall where we gathered with Al Gore just 4 or 5 weeks prior had 3 feet of flood water in it.
Yeah, no, And I must say that as much as I think the primary blame goes to the disinformation campaign from the right wing, and the secondary blame goes to the status quo media, which won't cover it, I do think that the President of the United States has a bully pulpit, and he can change the discussion. And President Obama has failed to give even one major speech on this central, you know, problem of our time. And I think that that does represent a failure in vision and leadership on his part. And I've been critical of it, and many environmentalists, from Robert Redford, you know, to Tim Wirth, have been urging the president to speak out, but
to continue,
you know,
that speech from the Oval Office, where he said we need to make the transition. This is our national goal to a clean energy future, but then forgot to tell us how. Told us to pray. That could be followed up on. We need a sequel to that speech, don't we?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the president is one of the few people who can change the national conversation, and I just think he's been listening to Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod, you know, who've been encouraging him, you know, to not talk about this subject, and as a result, the public remains uninformed.
Rahm Emanuel, whose brother Ari Emanuel was one of the founders of the Detroit Project, trying to get cleaner vehicles because of concerns about climate change. I guess I've been covering this beat too long. I know too many of the connections that are behind the scenes and wonder when they're going to start happening. But at least Chelsea Sexton's story is a positive one. Chelsea, I just want to hear a little bit more from you about where you think things need to go.
Well, I think that Joe's absolutely right, and I think that as much as we're thrilled to have finally had the first president who stepped as far as he had into these issues, you know, certainly it hasn't been very far in the grand scheme. In the meantime, though, I'm not that patient, and I think that we've seen over the last bunch of years how much the sort of grassroots level of things has also managed to change the conversation in its own way. And while we're waiting for leadership, you know, one of the ways to convert behavior is to provide compelling ways to do it. And we've seen, with respect to the vehicles, that people have adopted them not primarily out of anything cause-related, including environmentalism, but because they're cool, they're fun, they're fast, they're the new thing to have, and, you know, very basic things associated with human nature. And I say we capitalize on that, and that the most important thing we can do is to start allowing people to make different choices and encourage their friends to do so. And the value of peer pressure cannot be underestimated in this regard.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of the social sciences, the behavioral sciences, have given us some clues there, that we really are, for better or worse, kind of operating on a herd mentality, we humans. And we do what our peers are doing. And so once we make this more the norm, or this is the sexy car, not just the Tesla, but the Volt, and if nothing else, if you want to do your part to get off our addiction to oil after this catastrophe in the Gulf, that should really provide some forward momentum towards demand, building demand for hybrid cars, plug-in hybrids, and electric vehicles, no?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, people can't make choices if there's no choices to make, so that's the first step. And giving them more tools to do so and ways to increase that voice and visibility is key to spreading the word.
And having a product or two out there, you know, while there is demand. That's what's so exciting, as we said in the beginning of the hour, about having this Volt and the Tesla and the Nissan version of the electric car available, because we can actually, there's a tangible product to attach the excitement to. You can go out and buy it, or you can get on a waiting list, or you can lease it, where before, back when you were trying to, you know, convince GM that there really was demand for its own electric vehicle, and when, you know, that's the void we were trying to fill, we mothers for, you know, fuel-efficient cars, we're saying, we actually called it MAD, Mothers Against Gas Guzzlers, gas guzzling like MAD, pattern after MAD, saying there is demand out there because the moms were saying, yeah, we want more fuel-efficient cars, and the manufacturers were saying there's no demand. And so the moms were waiting for them to be made, and the car companies were saying, we're not going to make them because no one's asking for them, no one's buying them. But how could you buy them if it really wasn't there in a family-friendly version? So to actually have something there that people can buy and lease and create a clamor for is really got to be the turning point. We're not going back, correct?
Absolutely. And Joe's right. We're in for a lot more punishment, and punishment is a useful behavioral tool sometimes. But as all of us parents know, we always try to incentivize our kids and sort of get them to do the right thing before we have to resort to the punishment. So, you know, in some ways, offering the compelling avenues through which to do some of this stuff is a better option than waiting to be punished. And so the more we can meet people where they are and pull them along and not shame them into doing it, but have them want to be a part of it, you know, the better off we'll all be.
And we've just heard the latest reports are, guess what, we're not out of the recession yet, and that we're in for, you know, more difficult economic times in the coming months. How can we really rev up, accelerate, you know, the creation of green jobs in not only the vehicle space, but just the transition to cleaner technology, more efficient buildings and homes? What would you like to see happen there to create, you know, more jobs and to prove that this is part of the answer?
Well, I think we're starting to see a little bit of it in wanting to reclaim from other countries some of this domain. You know, we finally at least have rallied around batteries a little bit and are no longer content with allowing them to be manufactured in other countries. And to the extent that this is part of our future, we ought to be part of actually creating these components ourselves. So going back to the competition theme, a lot of it, I think, will stem from that.
Good point, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, with the setback in Congress, a lot of this is going to revert to the states, and states have been taking a leadership role on clean energy. It'd be nice if the federal government could pass a renewable electricity standard and more building standards. But now a lot of it is going to, you know, be up to individual governors and localities. Otherwise, it's not like the choice is between doing this and not doing this. The choice is between doing it now and doing it later, and if we do it later, then that result is other countries are going to become the world leader in these technologies, many of which we created, and they're going to end up with the jobs. So, you know, I think the good news is that American ingenuity and entrepreneurship still keeps us in the game, but, you know, if government doesn't help with intelligent rules and standards and incentives, you know, it becomes very hard to compete with other countries whose governments spend a lot of money in this area.
And can we achieve a lot at the what they call subnational level? I attended Arnold Schwarzenegger's climate change conference last October, and that's where the great hope, the great green hope, was at the sub, meaning regional, local. But don't we need sort of national standards, you know, whether it's for fuel efficiency or, you know, what you know, cap and trade limits, which we're not going to see now?
We do need national action because particularly because we need to be able to negotiate with other countries. Every other country in the world really is prepared to take action. So we absolutely need national action. But we're going to need pressure, grassroots pressure, to move these conservatives. I will also say that in California, two oil companies managed to put a proposition on the ballot, Proposition 23, aimed at shutting down California's global warming and clean energy laws. So I just urge people to get involved in this campaign to kill Proposition 23, because that proposition would be a huge setback for California and the whole nation on clean energy.
And we should mention, because we have a very hotly contested gubernatorial race coming up here in California in November, that Jerry Brown is very much for combating climate change and against 23, and Meg Whitman was one of the principals behind its formation. So a very clear distinction there in terms of a...
Absolutely. No, I mean, I think there's no question that California, the Senate race, too, between Carly Fiorina, who, you know, has resorted to, you know a shameless advertisement in which she pretends not to know the difference between climate and weather in order to attack Barbara Boxer, and Boxer has been obviously a leader on global warming. So, yeah, there's no question that what happens in California this November is going to tell us a lot about whether this country can, you know, still be a leader in clean energy.
And you mentioned, Joe, as we wrap up, the need for grassroots, you know, demand, grassroots power, people power. It seems like that's what's still missing, is the muscle behind the movement to demand climate change legislation. That's part of the reason it didn't happen in the Senate. It just wasn't there like there was clamor for health care reform. How do we, you know, really get that channeled? I'd like both of your closing thoughts. You have about a minute each. Why don't you start, Chelsea?
I think it comes down to first bringing some of these different factions together. We've been a great circular firing squad as a movement, as much as we've tried to rally behind anything individually. But a lot of it's just bringing it closer to home. It's, you know, healthcare is day in, day out, very visible to people. Climate change is tougher to translate, and I think we have to get better at that part.
Great. And how do we harness it, Joe, in your view?
Well, I think people need to, you know, find an organization that they themselves are comfortable with that is working in this area, and there's a lot of them. There's, you know, Natural Resources Defense Council, Sierra Club, 350.org. But, you know, get involved. I think we're all going to regret if we don't stop this. I think this will be our big regret in the coming decades, that we have ruined a livable climate for our children and grandchildren.
Regret, probably putting a little mildly. Thank you so much. And don't forget, let's not forget One Sky. And I'll just get in my plug for One Green Talk Show. That might help, huh? On a network level, syndicated green talk show for radio or television, where the kind of conversations we're having can be heard by millions of mainstream Americans. That's what I'm working on, and I'm sure you both agree that's needed as well.
Absolutely.
We don't have a single show, as far as I can tell, national show in this country devoted to climate or clean energy or the environment. So absolutely.
Lots of celebrity shows, lots of so-called reality shows. Ironic, isn't it?
Yes, Real Housewives.
Desperate Housewives. You want to see Real Desperate? Well, we'll see what the climate does to us in a few years. Thanks so much for joining me, Joseph Rome, Chelsea Sexton. You're the best. Keep up the great green work. And that does it for this edition of Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. Tell your friends about this program. We are on the cutting edge of what's happening out there on your planet. See you next time.